Does your computer repair business website need work? Go to techsitebuilder.com and get the official Podnuts method for making a site that works. Welcome to Podnuts Daily, episode number 255. I'm here with two computer geeks, actually. We have William Tidwell. He's calling from Gem State Computers. What's going on, William?
Nada, how's it going?
Very good. Actually, it's going a little weird here. A bug just crawled up on my table. I went looking for him to, not to kill him, but just remove him from the area. And he went around a little book, a manual here, and he vanished. And I have no idea where he went, so I'm just kind of skeeved out a little bit. Also joining us is Chris Barry from techadventures.com. What's going on with you, Chris?
Nothing. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. If you hear me scream like a little girl in the middle of the show, you'll know what happened. The bug will have presented himself. All right, it's an earwig, man. They're freaky. Okay. Aside from that, I'm doing great. Well, let's get into it here. William, tell us a little bit about your business.
I pretty much do the same thing everybody else does. Support a small business.
Residential?
Residential. A little bit of everything. Anything tech, really. I don't do coding, and I'm not big into building websites. I'll build you a flyer site, but you know, no e-commerce or anything like that.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, I mean, for computer repair, you're talking about customers building websites,
right?
For customers. You sometimes need a little more for them, but we know William from Nuts at Night episode. Actually, I've been emailing William back and forth throughout Podnuts for a long time, but we've actually started talking to you when we were doing Nuts at Night. You joined the post show a couple times and seemed like you were very knowledgeable in the internet, like computer modem, cable, internet field. Gave a lot of good information there. So where'd you get that background?
Well, it doesn't hurt that I'm a cable guy, my 9-to-5.
Okay, cool. Yeah, that's not going to hurt. Especially when I was freaking out about my internet connections a couple months ago.
It's the tubes. They're clogged up.
Yeah, it's the damn tubes. I got to get a pipe cleaner and clean them out. All right. Well, William, what did you bring for us today? Have some notes of some recent jobs you did and some tips?
Mostly just talking about tips, different things like that, programs and stuff.
Cool.
Pretty much all the jobs I've had lately are straightforward stuff.
Yeah. All right, what do you have for us?
Well, first thing I want to talk about was Outlook. I've actually started using Outlook as much as I hate it, but I mean, we're here to support our customers, and our customers, well, sometimes they don't have the best sense, so they use things like Outlook, or they're stuck in it with business. So
you mean you decided to use it personally just to get familiar with it?
Yeah, I've moved to Outlook full-time.
Damn.
Away from the Thunderbird. Oh, I know.
I feel so bad for you.
Still, Mike, my go-to fix anytime I have Outlook Express issues is to install Thunderbird. I just did that for a business client the other day. They called me up freaking out. They couldn't get on the internet, and they couldn't get email. So I log in, so of course they've got internet service. They had a CA antivirus, and I've seen this a couple times before, so went through the uninstall procedure with that and replaced it with Microsoft Security Essentials. Been having some good luck with it, and then installed Thunderbird and let it import everything over, and they were up and going, no problems.
Yeah, Thunderbird looks close enough like Internet Explorer that you're not going to hit any issues, I don't think, right?
Right, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's almost, you know, carbon copy.
Now,
as far as the interface.
Have you had any luck, or and you too, Chris, anybody who, you know, did you ever try to get somebody to like do just cloud email, like email on the cloud, like Gmail or Yahoo or something like that? Or you just, with whatever they have, you just try to set them up as best you can with what they have?
Yeah, I don't really push them one way or the other. I just find out which way they're doing it, either natively or in the cloud, and
right,
then just kind of work with them.
Right.
I can't stand cloud computing as far as email goes. It's just one extra step I don't need.
You mean for customers or for you?
For myself, yeah.
Oh,
plus,
man,
I have 9 accounts I'm keeping track of.
Gmail, man.
I changed.
I was downloadable mail all the time, you know, loading up my accounts in the POP server and all that crap. And then I found out about Gmail. And Gmail, you could just forward all your emails to Gmail. I have like 8 different accounts set up on my Gmail account, and they all, whenever you send an email out, it goes from that account. I'm loving Gmail. We'll talk about that maybe some other time. But it's a great option. Love my Gmail. What about you, Chris?
Yeah, I've tried to set customers up with online mail because, you know, they just don't need Outlook and Outlook Express. It's just more headache than it's worth for them. Most people just use it because that's what they were, you know, using 10 years ago with Windows XP or whatever they had. But whenever I show them or take them online, they're like, no, I can't understand this. No, this just can't work. No, and they won't do it. They won't even bother learning. So, you know, usually I either set up Thunderbird or Outlook Express or Windows Live Mail. And I've really tried to push all the customers onto Gmail because for pretty much one reason only, and that's spam. Most of them just get terrible amounts of spam I see. Huh. And Gmail is so awesome at stopping spam. I get nothing. I've had really old Gmail accounts that I've had since Gmail is quote unquote in beta.
Right.
And I get nothing. Like maybe one a month slips through. I don't even know if it's that.
Yeah.
It's just so good, but they won't switch. Most people are, oh, I can't change. So it's too hard.
I guess it is tough for the customers, but I'm with you on that. I mean, I get tons of email a day and I get very little spam. We're going to have to, you know, team up on William and get him to handle this for himself personally.
Oh no, I like my solution. I don't really get much spam at all.
What are you on, Thunderbird?
Before
Outlook, but you were on Thunderbird.
Yeah, Thunderbird. Okay. But all the emails, email providers have pretty good filtering. I've never had any issues.
Yeah.
Gmail, I actually got a lot for a while from them, and they must have updated their definitions, heuristics, or whatever they're using.
Huh. I'm surprised about that.
But I probably
what Outlook are you using?
Outlook 2010.
Yeah, that's what I have too. It's definitely better than all the rest of them. It's not nearly as slow and bloated.
It does seem a little bit peppy, but I have a underutilized computer as well.
Yeah.
That it's running on.
Are they still storing everything from Outlook into a big giant PST file that could go corrupt at any time?
Yes.
Yep.
Okay.
It's Windows.
That's the registry,
right?
Yeah, exactly. All right, cool. So you went over to Outlook.
Yep. Made the switch.
Interesting. I guess you have to do it.
I've recently done the same thing for QuickBooks as well. Same reason.
Man, what?
I know.
Making life miserable here.
Well, you know, it's not that bad. I mean, I don't really see any problems for myself, but
right.
I see how people can get in over their head, for sure.
It's just like Outlook. It's a bloated pig.
Yeah.
I have it too. I use it. I have to because it's just what 98% of the accountants use out there. But
exactly. That's the other half.
It's like in the music industry, everybody uses Pro Tools. And like if you want to switch over to Logic and use your Mac, it's cool. You can make your own music, but every time you want to take your music to a studio, they're like, well, where's your Pro Tools? Like, we need it in Pro Tools format. So I sympathize. I know what you mean. But hey, well, I thought, William, you were using Microsoft Accounting at one point.
I was. And I'll mention real quick that if you do buy QuickBooks, they do have an import tool. And, you know, I'm sure it works great. But the thing is that they fail to mention, they don't have a 64-bit compatible version. So if you're running Outlook or if you're running Microsoft Accounting, 64-bit on a 64-bit system,
all right,
you can't import anything. You have to do it manually. Or you can email them your file that has all your database and everything.
Right.
And for $50, they'll convert it themselves. Or, of course, you could always, you know, install in a 32-bit environment, transfer it over, and go through that way. But
that is hilarious.
Yeah, and they have no plans to make an upgrade for 64-bit support.
Well, not if they're making $50 every time somebody's got to freaking hit a load button.
I know.
It's pretty bad. Intuit and Microsoft, both of those guys just make me cringe. But hey, you know, right, people are using them. So you're talking about you switch QuickBooks for your own business purposes?
I did, okay. Yeah. Right. Just so in case anybody ever comes up, because I'm going to be doing, like I say, I'm going to be doing small business. Somebody comes up and says, hey, I have a QuickBooks problem. Well, all right, I use that at home. Let's see what we got. So I'm not looking like a complete tool.
Right.
Browsing around file settings, this, that, the other.
Yeah, it's a good point. That's actually a good tip. I probably should have did that myself.
You know, we should probably be using the same things as our customers are.
Yeah, I guess.
I know.
You gotta do what you gotta do. All right, what else you got?
How about Windows Home Server? Anybody playing with that, using that?
I know Steve D talked about it on Nuts at Night, but I haven't been. Chris, you?
Yeah, I have it. I love it. I just
are you, uh, the 2003 build or using the current Veil?
No, not the new one, because my processor isn't 64-bit.
Ah, yes, that's right. We had this conversation.
So what do you guys use it for?
Backup. Backup and network storage, mostly. Does it great. It does folder duplication, which is its kind of poor man's RAID.
Hmm.
And then you have little add-ins for whatever you'd like to do as well. There's a whole bunch of those.
That's cool.
But it does nightly incrementals. It'll wake the computer up, put it back to sleep for me.
Really? That's pretty good.
Yeah, and then basically just have a, if you ever need to, you have a boot disk. You boot into the recovery environment and restore the image.
So it'll go to sleep and it'll wake it up out of sleep mode.
Uh-huh.
Hmm. That's cool. Because I'm not a big fan of like just having a server or...
No. I leave it running 24/7. And that's because of my off-site backup, which we'll talk about here in a minute.
Okay.
But it'll wake up any computers, any clients that it needs to back up. It'll wake them up, back them up, and put them back to sleep on a schedule.
Oh, the server's running all the time.
Right.
Yeah, that makes sense. I don't know what I was thinking. Okay.
And then they do have a way you can set up remote access, so you can have your own, you know, podnuts.microsofthomeserver.com to remote in or access your files, things like that.
Huh. That's pretty cool.
So it's extremely useful, and for the price, I mean, you can't beat it.
How much does it cost?
It's what, $99 Newegg for the 03 version. Right now I'm running Veil just because it's more compatible with my hardware I'm running on.
What's Veil?
It's the 2008 build. It's based off Windows Server 2008 R2.
Huh.
So basically it looks like Windows 7.
And that's available right now?
It's in beta right now. They're doing, you know, the field beta testing. You can sign up at, let me see, I got the site up here.
It's also available on TechNet. I'm talking about the regular Windows Home Server, so if anyone has TechNet, they can get it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's connect.microsoft.com/Windows Home Server. I'll put that in the chat. And then you just sign up for a free account, and you don't have to have TechNet or anything. I just went through that today beforehand to make sure. And then you can sign up to test it out, download the ISO. Like he said, you do need a 64-bit computer, but it's amazing. It works great. I don't know why I haven't done this years ago.
Really? As opposed to what?
As opposed to Cronus or some other per computer client. I mean, there's nothing running on my computer except for just a little thing that signs into the server every time my computer pops up.
Huh. Now, is this something that you can incorporate into like your business and use like set customers up?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Hang on one sec. I have links off in the chat room. Let me assign a moderator here, and because I'm not on the Ustream chat, if anybody could just allow links that I've just modded, that'd be great. Okay. So how would you do that? Like, when would you actually set up a customer or recommend Home Server when a customer has what problem he's trying to solve?
I'm not so much a problem as just value added services. I mean, come on, that's what we're here for.
Would you do it just for backups or when they want to stream media? Like if they have a media
backups, network storage, streaming. I mean, it's a server. You can pretty much do whatever you like with it. Print sharing.
So you could, a customer could store all of the songs and movies on it and then stream it to another computer.
All my photos, all my music. And then here's the really cool thing I just recently found. I've been looking forever for something that'll work on a server without having to pay server rates. Because, you know, anytime you run on a server, your software gets ridiculously expensive.
Right.
Crash Plan.
All right, tell us about CrashPlan. We talked a little bit about this, I think, on Linux for the rest of us. Tell us about CrashPlan.
Basically, CrashPlan, it's cross-platform Windows, Mac, Linux. You download a client onto whatever you want to be doing the backup, and then you have options as far as where to backup to. You can do local backup. You can attach a backup, a drive. You can back up to other computers that you're signed into the same account with. So you have two computers in the home, they can back each other up. Or you can pay for their, it's in their store. They have online backup. It's $4.50 a month, so $55 a year, unlimited backup. Or you have a family pack, it's like $100, and it's all your computers.
Hmm. And you can back up to their servers.
Yes, and it'll run on servers.
It'll run on servers.
Yeah, so it's running on my Windows Home Server, which backs up all the local machines.
I see. So that makes it easy for you. You just have to put it on one computer.
Right. So it sits there doing the uploading. I don't have to worry about my computer taking a hit. I don't have to worry about my computer coming on all hours of the day to do updates and to keep everything synchronized. I couldn't be happier.
Wow. And you've tried like Carbonite. You compared this like Carbonite. And
I was Carbonite for a long time, but once I got the Windows Home Server, I decided I wanted to find something to work on it.
Carbonite wouldn't run on Home Server.
Carbonite, Mosey, all the big ones you've probably heard of, Backblaze, all those guys, they won't run on a home server or any sort of server environment because you need their enterprise version or what have you. I found two, CrashPlan and LiveDrive. Not the Windows LiveDrive, it's just LiveDrive. If you search for that.
Which one's better?
I like CrashPlan because I don't have issues with it if you want to, because I need something that, right now I'm running, like I say, Veil in my home because I like it better than the O3 version just for hardware sake. But if I'm going to sell this to a computer, sell this to a customer, I still need to have something that's going to work on the 2003 version.
Right.
And LiveDrive is a little bit crashy on the 2003 version. It's some sort of .NET problem. They were pretty cool with me. I tech support it in free trial. All this was free trial, and you know, tech support, send me off their logs, what have you. Worked back and forth with them. They were really, really good about it. But I found something that worked better from the get-go. And the pricing's about the same. So I've moved over to CrashPlan. Plus, you have the options to back up to other computers.
Yeah, so now that's pretty neat. That's what we talked about on Linux for the rest of us.
Platform.
Yeah, that's what we talked about on Linux for the rest of us. It's cross-platform, and you don't have to back up to their servers. You could just, you know, like, me and you could technically like install CrashPlan and back up each other's computers to our own computers, right?
Oh yeah,
that's pretty cool.
And of course, they've got all the security features. You can encrypt it and whatnot.
So if I
back, they also will let you seed your initial backup. So they'll send you a drive. You put whatever you need on it, send it back to them. They'll upload it to your servers, so you're not eating up your connection for however long it takes to do your initial backup.
They'll send you a drive?
Uh huh.
It's weird. It's pretty neat. Now, when you say it's encrypted, like if you backed up all your computer to my computer through the internet, through CrashPlan, I would not be able to see any of the files here. They'd be encrypted. Is that right?
You know, I haven't played with that part, but I would assume that since they say that they've got encrypted storage, they would also set that up for the machine to machine backup as well. I mean,
neat. How much does it cost?
Like I said, the basic program is free. You get 1 year for, it looks like, $54 for a one computer plan. You got a family plan that says all the computers, $100 a year.
Man, that's
great. And then, of course, they have discounts as you go up for the yearly rates. It's crashplan.com/consumer. Just crashplan.com and then click on the store link.
Cool. Yeah, I'm at the store link now. That's a good name, too. I like CrashPlan. Sounds cool.
Yeah.
Cool, man. That's a great tip. Chris, any input on this?
No, it's cool. I was just looking at it. Do they have any reseller?
I was kind of looking for that myself. I haven't found it yet, but I've been so busy with other stuff, I haven't really dug into it.
They have partner program down at the bottom. Let's see what that's about. CrashPlan Pro Partner Program is for service providers looking to add fully managed backup to their offering. There you go.
Managed. There you go.
Where do you see that?
Small print, bottom right of CrashPlan.com.
Okay.
Partner program. Okay, William, that's cool. Got any other tips for us?
Cleaning computers.
Yeah.
I don't know what you guys do as far as cleaning the computers. Of course, blow it out, wipe it down, whatever kind of cloth you like.
Talking about physically cleaning.
Yes, physical cleaning. Pretty important.
Sure.
Something I've found that works extremely well for cleaning off stickers or whatever other crazy stuff they've got left on there, because the last thing I want to do is send a computer back looking like crap.
Right.
Is Goo Gone.
Oh, it's Goo Gone.
It's kind of, I think it's a orange-based product, but it's, you know, use it for anything. Spray it on there, let it set a minute, credit card or something, kind of stiff like that, scrape it off, works great, leaves it smelling nice and fresh.
Now, you use it to remove just like glue and that kind of thing, or you like wipe the whole computer down with it?
No.
Okay.
No, just the horrible stuff, half torn off stickers. You know, they come with all the specs and whatnot.
Right.
On the front, and people try and tear them off. They get half of it off. No luck.
That's a great idea. You know, I would sit there with Purell for a while and just like rub that and rub it, and it wouldn't come off. But every once in a while, I'd get some goo gone in, and you're right. It makes life easy. And there's an awful lot of, like, crappy stickers on computers that have just ripped halfway off and stuff.
Too true.
You know, I'm telling you, when my dad was working for me, like, the first thing we did was just cleaned the dust out of every single computer that came in. And then before we gave it back to him, we'd wipe it down. Because that little step of just, like, wiping a computer down or using the Goo Gone and getting off all the crud, puts you, like, that much... People don't do that. And it puts
people
you...
People notice. They really do.
Yeah, they do. And it puts you that much better than the next guy. So it gives you a little bit of an advantage. It's a great little thing to do. It's like they're getting a brand new computer back.
Yeah, just dropped one off last week. The guy came in and said, "That's not my computer. Did you give me a new computer?" No, I just cleaned it. Oh, the stickers are gone. Yeah, that's your computer, I promise. I didn't upgrade you.
That's great.
That's awesome, totally.
Well, you know what? I bet half the people don't even think those stickers are supposed to come off. You know,
they don't act like they're supposed to.
You know, well, Toshiba used to have, like, stickers on, like, selling accessories, like, right on the inside of the laptop. And they would always be on there, those ugly red stickers.
And they're already worn through, so they're white because people are resting their hand on there.
Right. The only thing you got to worry about taking the stickers off is now there's a clean white spot under the sticker. That's cool. Great tip. I like cleaning tips. I think that it's such a step that really... goes a long way as far as helping your business.
Well, here's another one. Yeah. First thing I do anytime I intake a desktop is before it even enters my shop, I have it set down outside. I crack the case open. I'll look at the capacitors with the customer there just to nip that in the bud before it becomes a problem.
Right.
So you don't get one of those calls. Say, "Hey, sorry to tell you, your motherboard's bad. We need to replace." And they're like, oh, my motherboard's bad. What's that going to cost me?
Exactly.
Just to show them right there, look, that's not supposed to look like that.
Right.
If you're not, you know, if you don't want to go through it with this now, take it. You don't owe me anything. Just to kind of avoid any future problems.
Right.
Plus, they get to kind of see how nasty it is in there.
Yeah, well, most of them don't even know to take the case off and clean it themselves.
Yeah.
Almost all of them, actually. So, all right, so you do that.
That's probably one of the first things on my checklist, any computer that comes in the shop.
You open it up right in front of them and show them check the caps. Cool. That's a good one. But you don't clean it in front of them?
No.
Yeah.
No.
Ruin their clothes, it would probably.
Oh, man. It's horrible.
You know, the guys that bought my shop, because I would always take them out front. My dad would take them out back because he didn't want, like, the dust blowing all over the place. I'd take the computers out front when I clean desktops and just hit it with the leaf blower right in front of the store. And though it did make clouds of dust, I felt like it actually drew attention to my business. Like, whoa, what's that guy doing? And then they might see the sign. But aside from that, I think the guys that bought my shop, they would clean the computers, if they did clean them at all, inside the shop.
Oh, that's disgusting.
It's disgusting. This is just like a measure of standards here. You watch people like do stuff like that and you go, okay, now I know what his house probably looks like. But cleaning the computers out is always key.
Yeah. High speed wind and a stiff paintbrush, best friend.
Oh, yeah. Toothbrush too helps a little bit.
Yeah.
Mainly
for
laptops. Paintbrushes. I forgot about. That's such a great cleaning tool.
Oh yeah, I've got like three in my box of junk here.
Yeah, it is. It's like it's better than any duster. It gets in there. And you know what? It's easy to clean a paintbrush. You just take it on the side of a desk and just go shink, 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 get all the dust out and you're good to go.
Definitely.
All right. What else?
Well, I don't know what you guys use for backup. As far as, say you're going to be migrating a customer, you end up having to do a format and reinstall. But have you heard of FABS Auto Backup? I'm sure you have.
We haven't talked about it in a long time, but tell us about it.
Well, there is a new version out, version 3. It's all of like $7.
What does it do?
It goes through, backs up all the common user locations. It'll back up your PST, your favorites, a little bit of everything. It's great program. I can't recommend it enough. I mean,
one of the clutch things I know that it does is it digs into your Outlook Express folders and saves that. Like you said, it saves PSTs. But I mean, like, manually saving all that takes a lot of time. So this is a great tool.
Yeah, and it's €4.90, whatever that computes to. I bought it and it was like $7 way back when it first came out.
What does the new version do? Anything special?
Looks like it's got shared folders, documents, all the normal stuff. The desktop, the background, the current wallpaper, people seem to like that. Your favorites, start pages, all your Firefox extensions and settings. Chrome, it looks like it's added Safari, Opera.
Do you have to run it for each account on the computer?
You run it from whatever account you're at. You can select them if it sees multiple accounts. And then, of course, it just everything's in a folder. You transfer it to the new computer and run the restore wizard.
That's awesome.
And it does have Outlook, Outlook Express, everything. I mean, even modem settings, dial-up. It looks like they've added Skype.
Really?
Messenger, yep.
Wow, this is sweet, eh? I've never used this before.
Oh, it's a lifesaver.
Let me
even
go there now.
Even if you're
now.
Just using the free version auto backup too, but for as cheap as it is, it's such a great tool.
Fabs auto backup. Let's see. What's the website?
It's fpnet.fr.
Okay. fbnet.fr.
FP, like Paul.
Sorry.
Cool. Oh, yeah. Fabs Auto Backup 3. Got a nice new page. Let's check out some screenshots here. Wish I had video up. Cool. Yeah, that's a great tool. I remember that. But now they have the screenshots all using like Vista and 7, so that's pretty cool.
Always makes things prettier.
Oh, yeah.
People like the pretty.
That's cool. Great tip.
One thing I'd like to address real quick, and Chris can turn his ears off if he doesn't want to hear about TechNet. Legality. Breaking a EULA, for starters, is not the same as breaking the law. Let's just get that out there and get people over it. Microsoft is not going to come pound your door down and arrest you directly. They have lawyers for that. As far as the legality of it goes, you know what? A disk image is a disk image. Regardless of where it came from, it's the licensing that you're paying for.
Right.
So long as you have a proper license for that computer, I don't think it matters where that disk comes from.
Okay. You're talking about doing like a reinstall on a customer's machine, not having the disk, not having the Windows disk. And then, so since you're a TechNet user, you're using your TechNet ISO.
Exactly. But they've kind of taken care of that because all those disks are retail and very few computers you work on are going to have a retail license.
That's right. You can't get OEM through TechNet.
But you can change a retail into an OEM. It's a pretty simple thing to do.
Okay, so you're saying you can't use the TechNet ISOs on most OEM machines because the code won't go through?
Right. It'll fail. It won't even, as you're doing the installation, say XP, because that seems to be probably what most of us are working on anymore still with that. You're going to put the code in, it's just going to fail. It's going to say invalid serial. Try again.
And you're saying there's a way to change or OEM to retail?
Vice versa, either way, yeah.
If you have TechNet, you need to, it'll work with a retail code, you're saying?
Right.
Okay. Okay. So,
but you can make it work with an OEM code.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah.
It's just a simple file hack.
How do you do it?
On any Windows installation disk, well, XP, this is the only one you really need to do it with is XP. Because if you got 7 or Vista, it just goes off what the code is to know what version it is. So I haven't seen those problems with it yet. And if that does present itself, I imagine somebody will come up with a workaround similar to this.
Okay.
But if you take a look at your system properties, it'll give you a product ID.
Okay.
And depending on whether it's an OEM or retail version, you'll see somewhere in there perhaps OEM or just a bunch of numbers. As far as changing the disk, what you're going to do is open up the disk or mount your ISO. You're going to navigate into the I386 folder.
Right.
It's a file called setup, setupp.ini.
Okay.
You're going to open that. You've got a number in there, and it's the last three digits, the channel ID.
Okay.
You're going to have 000 through... I mean, just all sorts of different numbers, and that tells you whether it's what kind of key it will take. If you're picking up one from TechNet, generally it's going to have 000. So basically, you take that change it to capital OEM, save it back in, burn the disk. It'll take OEM keys, no problem.
Wow, that's an easy hack.
Extremely.
And all you got to do is one time and then just make copies of that ISO, right?
Right.
Sweet. Okay. That being said, you stated your EULA statement in the very beginning. So you're saying, does the TechNet EULA prohibit this?
I have no idea.
Okay. So you just made that statement just for making the statement.
EULA controls the software, not the disk. I mean, the disk is just transportation of the software.
Right.
I mean, it's like driving a car around. There's things you can and can't do with a car that are or not illegal, but it's just get you there. It's just a tool.
Right. I know. I agree. And it seems like it should be fine. I guess there's no reason why you shouldn't be able to use this. I was just wondering if the Microsoft EULA prevents tampering of the ISOs. I don't know.
Could be. But then again, it is for testing purposes. And what better test than to mess with it?
That's a good point. Well, again, I don't know. We'll never be able to get a definite on this. But if I were you, when I was still in the business there, I personally wouldn't have a problem using.
I lose no sleep over it.
Yeah, exactly.
It's one of the greatest tools I've got because I know the images are clean, no worries.
Right. And you paid your TechNet license fee.
Yep.
That's yearly, right, TechNet?
Yeah.
Okay. I like it.
Yeah, it looks like they're going through some transitions right now, too. I guess they have TechNet Home and Pro now.
Oh, really?
Something to that effect.
But
basically, they've lowered the price of it. And then I guess it's the home version, doesn't include any enterprise licenses. So the volume licenses, which you don't need anyway.
Right, right. Cool. That's a great tip. That's a great hack. I wish I would have known that.
Need any information on it, you're just going to basically have Google PID, retail to OEM, or something to that effect.
Okay.
I could probably stick some links in the chat there.
All right. PID. All right. It sucks doing Podnuts Daily after I sold my business. Like, I got all these things I want to use. All right. Do you got anything else for us, William?
If you're not using Cashback, Bing Cashback, you should be.
Cashback?
Uh-huh. Cashback.bing.com or vice versa. One of the two.
Oh, yeah. What is that?
Basically, you go through there, they redirect you to whatever stores, and it doesn't have to be tech. I mean, they've got everything in there. And you get, the lowest I've seen is 2%. You wait 60 days, they send it to you, PayPal, check, Visa card, whatever.
So you just get money, if you go shopping through these links, they give you basically a certain percentage back.
Yep. Like I just picked up a laptop the other day through Tiger Direct. I got 12% back.
Wow. Wow, that's great.
That's insane. And then, of course, you pair that with something like an American Express card that pays you to use it anyways. I mean, that's easy money in your pockets.
Great tip. I mean, please don't let people not use the Podnuts link because of this. But these are great. It's a great tip. You never get 10% on computers. I mean, like, especially with electronics. That's insane. Yeah, that's great.
12% on a laptop.
That's pretty awesome.
I didn't have to mark that up to sell it.
Yes, you do.
Well, no, I'm saying, I mean, I don't have to.
So, was it like a refurb or something?
No. It's just, if you go there now, you just click on the stores and, you know, the percentage is kind of, it'll either have a solid percent or it'll give you a range. And then you go through checkout and you'll get an email from Bing saying, hey, you've got cash back waiting to be claimed.
Bing, man, they're trying so hard to get people to use it.
Changing the service. I did get some email from them recently saying that they're going to be canceling that specific program, but they're going to replace it with something similar.
You mean the cashback program?
Yeah.
Yeah, and then know what's going to happen? They're just going to give up on it.
Who knows?
Because people are going to still use Google, no matter what they do. Yeah.
I hope not. I love it, man. Any sort of products I need to buy, that's... You know, if the provider's on there, regardless of what I'm buying, whether it's computer stuff or just things I need, I check and see if the person I'm going to buy it from is in there. And if not, I'll check and see if somebody that is there has a similar product.
Right. This is really cool.
You should do it soon because I just tried doing it. It says, as of July 30th, 2010, Microsoft will no longer be offering the cashback program.
Damn.
There you go. But you've got till then to earn rewards.
Yeah, 11 days.
Well, you don't know when I'm going to edit and post this. I'm pretty sure. I know. I'll try to get it out tomorrow. All right, cool. That's a good tip, William, for now.
I'll let Chris talk for a little while.
Chris, I'll tell you, buddy, I didn't bring much to prepare. I'm just here for moral support.
looks like last thing I got on my list is fillanypdf.com.
All right, what's that?
Kind of self-descriptive. Yeah. I let you upload a PDF to it and makes it fillable for you, form fillable, so you don't need to. And I'm all about not having programs on my computer that I don't need to.
Right.
I'm more all about having not having programs on my customers' computers that they don't need. That's really
right. So you mean what won't you need with this? Adobe Reader is what you're saying?
Well, anything that'll fill it out. I mean, you can find some free software to let you make editable or take a non-editable one and make it editable, whether it's trials or what have you. But why go through that hassle if you get something free like this?
Yeah, that sounds great. And you could resave it as a PDF.
Yeah.
Wow. What's the name of it again?
FillAnyPDF.com.
FillAnyPDF.com. Neat. Let me go there right now. And then we'll read some emails. PDF.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. This is like taking the place of a $500 program.
What, like Acrobat?
Yeah.
Ooh, neat. I like the interface. Very cool. Great tip. There you go. All right. Well,
all right. I lied. Looks like I have some more.
You have more stuff?
Saluto. I don't know how you pronounce it. Yeah. Soluto.
Yeah.
Great startup manager. Lets you delay startup processes if you like. Maybe just pop over their site, take a look at it. It's great little software. It goes on all computers I work on now. That and Log Me In. Those two things just make life so much easier.
What is the website?
You know, I don't have it off the top of my head here. Just do a quick search. Soluto.
Oh, S-O-L. My bad. I'm typing S-A. I'm getting all kinds of crazy stuff. There we go. Saluto.com. There it is. Oh, yeah. Door-to-Door Geek talked about this. Anti-frustration software.
Yes.
That's cool.
Love it.
Now you use it. It probably does more than this, but you use it just as a startup manager?
Yeah. Stuff that people want to start up, but that doesn't necessarily need to start up right away for them to run the computer. You can put it in delay, so it'll delay the startup of that.
Oh, cool.
And then you can get fancy reports of how much time it's saving you and this and that.
Yeah, but, and I mean, if you guys go there, there's probably like a little video you could check out. It tells you all about it.
Yeah, that lays it out pretty good.
Yeah, it looks like they're really trying to make this simple. I mean, they're doing like...
It is pretty simple. They do have a database. Of course, they need people to use it and answer the questions as far as programs, so it'll be a little bit more complete, but I haven't had any problems with it as of yet.
Do you use it on customers' machines?
Yes. Since I found it, I have.
Neat. And it's not obtrusive. It's not going to pop up anything that freaks them out.
No, you've just got a little icon in the tray. It looks like a smiling power button.
Oh, okay. That's pretty neat. Saluto. Cool. Anything else that popped in there, William? Or?
You know, nothing rising in the moment. I'll take a look.
It's cool. No, you don't have to. I mean, we can read emails and stuff.
Oh, no, go ahead.
Yeah. I'll start reading them and play some voicemails. And then if we have any more, we'll hit it at the end. All right, emails. Okay, that's what I meant to say. We got an email here from Food, F-H-O-O-O-D, weird name, let me see. Food, F-H-O-O-O-D, says, hello, how are you? I just wanted to ask if I could put three Windows in my computer, Windows XP and Vista and 7. How can I put it there? Are there programs to do that? Thank you.
I'll field this one real quick.
Yeah, go for it.
What you're going to want to do is unplug everything first so you don't shock yourself when you open the case. And just however much room you got, that's the limit, man. Just jam it in there, close it up.
I like that the best, too. That's
I mean, it wouldn't be the weirdest
answer.
Thing I've ever found in a computer. And that's about all you're going to want to do for XP and Vista.
That's pretty awesome.
Right?
You know what? If this person does listen to the show, which I doubt, they will probably try that. So
we're just kidding.
Do you have any other suggestions?
No, I'll let you handle it.
You can run virtual machines. You like VirtualBox, Chris?
That's free, right?
Yeah. You get VirtualBox from Sun Software. You could also do a multi-boot through Windows. I know you could run Vista and XP. There's a tutorial, I can't remember which site it's on, but I've done it where I've had both operating systems on different partitions on the hard drive. So you could set up three partitions and then probably have to use Windows 7's boot manager, I'm guessing, to pick which one you want to get into. But yeah, there's tutorials online. We can't go into detail here. Or you can just run a virtual box.
I'd say the big thing, if you're going to do it all from one machine on one drive, is make sure you install the oldest operating system first, regardless of, you know, what you're doing.
Right.
So XP, then Vista, then 7, because they all know about each other that way. You do it the other way around, you're going to have to do a little bit of fiddling with
the boot
manager.
Exactly. That's what happens. If you have Vista on first, and then you try to install XP, it messes everything up. You have to actually put the Vista disk back in and use VLite or some crap, I forget, and get it all set up. So good.
Easy BCD edit, I think.
Okay.
But another good way to take care of that is if you have multiple drives, just get yourself an easy removable drive tray. So basically you can slap SATA drives in and out, flip it off, and you have one drive per operating system if you're just really wanting to test it out.
Yeah, but then you got to switch out the drives. That's a pain.
It's a good separation, too. You don't have to worry about one messing with the other. And
you don't have to worry about your power supply powering three different drives.
Right.
You know, I just installed one of them on this machine. I love them little things. It's like a little refrigerator door, and you just open it, and your drive pops out.
Oh, they're great.
Yeah, they are. They're cheap, too.
For scanning drives. That's basically what I use them for.
Yeah, I'm actually using them for just storing media, like HD video and stuff like that.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk. Let's read another email here. This one's from Hosea. He says, love the new show Linux. Love the new show Linux for the rest of us. Keep up the good work. What are the names of the bootable hard drive diagnostic tools mentioned on recent episodes of PodNuts? I guess we don't have show notes for that, but listen to my hard drive guide. You'll hear a lot of the diagnostics. But basically, we got MHDD. You got Victoria. You know, Ultimate Boot CD for Windows. You got stuff on there. Crystal Disk Info. I don't know if Crystal Disk Info is bootable, but the other ones are. It's got CTools, CEATOOLS. I've used that a lot, actually, in my shop. Any other suggestions from you guys?
No, I think you covered pretty much all the bases. CrystalMark, that's one of those that pretty much any computer that comes in gets run on, because there's no way of looking at a hard drive and telling how many hours it's got. I've had some in here with 74,000 hours on it.
Right.
And there's no way you ever know.
Crystal Disk Info?
Yeah.
Cool. Chris, anything on that?
Nope.
Okay. We got one from Daniel here. He says, first, I want to say thank you. I really enjoyed the laptop repair videos. I learned a lot, and it has helped me with my many repairs. And those are available at laptoprepairvideos.com. That's just my little plug in there. Anyway, he says, I'm sending you this email because I ran into a problem I'm not able to fix. I'm working on a gateway, MT3423. The laptop won't power on. I take it back. It does power up at times, but mostly won't power on. The jack is fine. I get the power light on the front. I test it, and I get 19 volts. I thought you might have run into this problem and could shed some light on it. I could use help on this one. It's a very nice laptop. I would like to get it up and running. Now, these type of random power problems where it doesn't power up, it does power up, it's usually not a real good sign. It's usually a motherboard issue. Most of the time it's a power jack issue. I mean, so there's power jacks, especially in gateways, that just barely make a connection. So sometimes it will power up, sometimes it won't. Now, he's saying when you plug the adapter into the computer, the power light stays on in the front. So if the power light of the front of the computer is on all the time, but the computer still won't power up, okay, then it's definitely not your power jack. Because if your power jack was loose, you'd see the power light on the front of the computer go on and off and flicker when you jiggle the AC adapter around inside the jack. So if you're jiggling the AC adapter and that light in the front of the computer staying on and the computer still doesn't power on or only does sometimes, you know, you're either looking at a flaky power button or bad motherboard somewhere. You know, you may be able to get away with switching out the RAM. Very rare, but it might be possible. And another rarity could be that it's your processor. But it's one of those things. My money would be on bad motherboard. But you guys have any input on this?
No, I think you pretty much covered it.
Yeah.
You're the laptop guy.
Yeah, that's what I would say. All right. Adil says, I have to repair a Toshiba Satellite L40 laptop. The issue is it turns back on after shutdown only when the AC adapter is connected. On battery, it works fine. I've tried all software and operating system tweaks, but in vain. So it turns back on after shutdown only when the AC adapter is connected. This is another thing. I mean, you get these weird power issues. It's usually some kind of circuitry on the motherboard that just went kind of wonky. I mean, the fact that it works with the battery and it doesn't work with the AC adapter, you know, all that circuitry is in the motherboard. Let's see if there's any other thing that could be causing that. It turns back on after shutdown only when the AC adapter is connected. You know, I would
could be wake on LAN.
Yeah, wake on LAN. Yeah, it could be. It could be. Check that. But also, like, that's, I would flash your BIOS, you know? Sometimes when a computer's acting kind of goofy, you know, the BIOS is like the, let me see, the very
nervous system.
Yeah, it's like the nervous system, the very basic functions of your laptop, like the motor functions are your BIOS. It just tells the main things what to do, what to turn on, what to turn off. So if that gets, it's like, you know, a computer gets a little brain damage, it means your BIOS is wacko. So just like do a brainwashing of your BIOS basically by just flashing the BIOS or at least resetting a CMOS. Give it a shot. Might work. All right. Let me read one more email here. This one's from Adam. He says, Steve, you may have covered this before in a prior podcast. I've looked in the forums too, but I can't find reference to it in the forums. Is there a program available for computer repair shops to get discounts on copies of Windows? In other words, if you had to install a new copy of Windows when you had your shop, did you just get an OEM version from Newegg or something, or did you get it directly from Microsoft or a reseller for a discounted price? Well, Adam, there is bulk versions of Windows. I started looking into that, and I didn't get too far. My probably best bet, if you're looking to buy maybe buy 5 or 10, is buy them on eBay and just make sure you get a reputable seller who's not just selling you, you know, TechNet copies or something like that. But it's very rare you get a computer in your shop that doesn't have a licensed copy of Windows on it that you could just use the product key on the side of that machine. So I had to... very little instances where I actually had to buy Windows for the customers. And I think I just got them at Micro Center when I did. But no, it's not recommended to just use an OEM copy and to install. Like, say you're building computers. You can't just, like, from scratch and you're selling them. You can't just buy one OEM copy, put on all the computers, and sell them. You need to buy a licensed copy for each computer. Do you guys know of any places to get bulk versions of Windows?
You can get bulk on Newegg.
Okay.
If you want to use podnuts.com/Newegg.
Thank you. What kind of discounts are they offering? Do you know?
You know, I've never really looked at it. I've never needed more than 5 at a time.
Yeah. Chris?
No, I'm not really sure either. I always buy, you know, 1 or 2 at a time every time I build a new PC, but geez, that's not very often.
Yeah. It's like I said earlier, it's kind of rare you need Windows because anybody who brings a computer in usually has it on there. So they already have a licensed copy. So wish I could give you better help on that, Adam. Adam, if you can't find it in the forums, then I would actually post it in the forums. Ask it direct, like you just asked me, and see what they say. Probably give you some good info. All right.
Microsoft does have a program for refurbishers, if that's what he's doing.
What is it? Where is it at?
Just take a look on their site. I've actually just went through the process of applying. It takes a couple weeks, so once I hear back, I'll let you guys know what kind of pricing they have, but it's discounted pricing basically for refurbishing computers for schools. They do have a so you can resell it, but mostly it's kind of charity type stuff.
I see.
Is what it looks like so far.
Still, that might work out for what he's looking for. Good. Thanks for that, William. Well, let me play. Actually, Door to Door Geek sent 2 voicemails. I think they are I think one of them's directed to Steve D'Amico, who just had a baby. So let me see. Let me see what let me see what Dore has to say about this. Mark all viewed. Open up the history. And where are those voicemails? Here we go. So let me play these two messages from Door to Door Geek, and then we're going to end off the show. Any, if you guys who are actually on the Skype call with me, you're not going to hear these messages unless you mute your Skype and then turn on your Ustream. So
no problem.
Okay. Here's the first message from Door to Door Geek.
Hello, Steve, Door to Door Geek. This message is for Steve D'Amico. Steve D'Amico, I love you, brother. Congratulations. Beautiful, bouncing baby boy. Five fingers, five toes. Looks great. I have no doubt in your phenomenal ability to raise adults with common sense and logic. I have faith in you, bro. We're going to have to plan a play date. All right, Steve. And Steve, I'll talk to you guys later. Bye.
Well, that was very nice of Door to Door Geek. A little message there for Steve D. Steve D just had a baby. And apparently Door to Door Geek thinks he's going to do a phenomenal job of being a father. And I think we all will. I think we all do. Steve's child, I can't wait to see the different stages of Steve's child's life and what he's going to be getting into with having, you know, with having Steve D as a father. You know, he's going to, the first thing he's probably going to have is an Android phone. You know, he's going to do, he's going to work on computers. He's going to be a geek. We'll see, but it should be interesting. But congratulations, Steve.
Yeah, congratulations, Steve.
Definitely. Yeah, it's quite a ride.
Yeah, you guys are both fathers.
They like to do, yeah. They like to do whatever it is you're doing.
Really? I guess that's something I have to look forward to as well. He sent another voicemail here. I think this is like a follow-up. Let me play this for you guys. Here we go.
Hello, Steve. It's Door to Door Geek. I got one more quick message for Steve D'Amico. When you change the diaper, make sure the Willy Wonka is pointing in a different direction. I lay my kid perpendicular to me and make sure my head is back. Gotta be careful, man. That thing attacks. All right, bye.
Oh, that's awesome. So apparently,
what did he say?
He said, when you're changing the baby's diaper, hold the baby perpendicular to you and make sure the Willy Wonka is facing in the other direction.
It's good funny because it's true.
So get your protractor out and change the baby's diaper.
And guaranteed, one of your relatives is going to put the diaper on backwards.
Really? Is that what happens?
Oh, yeah. My aunt has done it. My stepfather has done it.
So
and you go to change the diaper, and you're looking for the tabs, and they're not where they normally are.
That's crazy.
You're like, what happened here?
I guess you have to constantly supervise. All right. Good tips from Door to Door Geek. Thank you for those voicemails. All right. Well, I think that's going to wrap up Pod Nuts Daily. I want to thank both you guys for being on the call. William, great job. I think you did awesome. Chris, thank you for the moral support.
That's what I'm here for.
And if you want to talk to these guys in action and interact with them more, both of them are regulars on Nuts at Night post shows. So, hey, that's where it's at. You guys got to hang out with us late at night. The more people we have in there, the more of a party it is. I think we had like 8 people on the post show.
Yeah, that was getting a little crazy.
It got crazy. And then, you know, I usually fall asleep. We go late into the morning, guys. I got a text message from Steve D at 3:30 in the morning saying, okay, we're done now. So that's a lot of fun. You guys got to check that out. All right. Well, that's going to wrap up today's episode of Pod Nuts Daily. See you all next time. Music for Pod Nuts Daily has been provided by Evan King at purevolume.com/Evan King.